Gary Herbert is a genius compared to his Republican primary opponent. This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Biskupski for the win. This is Dan McKay on the right.
Open primaries, no more in Utah. Natalie Gochner in the political center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. But first, this news. Good morning, I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I am joined in the studio by State Senator Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Whoop, whoop, what a morning.
And on the political right by Representative Dan McKay.
Good morning, everyone.
Dan, great to have you here today.
The antithesis, right?
Sounds like sacrament meeting from the right today.
I love the time when we're not on the air and we're just having a good time chatting, but let's keep the spirit as we talk about the morning, you know, the week of elections and what's happened in this state. With
best week of the year.
Yeah, fun time for political junkies. And we have what looks to be a likelihood of a new mayor of Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
Jim, let's get your reaction.
Look, I have no complaints about Ralph Becker. I think he's done a pretty good job, very good job over 8 years. But anything past 8 years for an executive job is really tough. You make a lot of enemies, and they remember you a lot more than your friends. I think that Jackie is going to be a terrific mayor. And if you ask me why I think Ralph lost, I think it was the 8 years. And I think he brought in a staff of people that shut him off and closed him in a circle. He's kind of introverted anyway. And this staff is responsible for just not pushing him to get out there and get more involved in the community. And they sat back and made a lot of decisions without that kind of input that is a horribly hard thing and miserable thing. You get frustrated and you want to get things done and it's just easier. They did that. They alienated a lot of different pockets in the community, and that's why won.
Dan, you're not a resident of the city, right?
No, but I pay attention to this race.
Yeah.
I
mean, and you work downtown.
Yeah, and I work downtown. So I'm around Salt Lake City and I'm aware of this race. What will be very interesting to me, Jim, is Jackie ran a pretty ideological campaign. But she was not an ideological lawmaker. In fact, she was extremely pragmatic. Mm-hmm. And so it was very interesting to me in this campaign that, you know, it was just an idea of confusion as I watched the campaign because she isn't an ideologue. And so the idea that that now she's got this ideological philosophy to stand up in her executive position in the city, and now I'm going to be interested to see who the executive is. Is it the ideological
or the
pragmatic?
What is an ideological position in a city?
It's different, isn't it? Because curb and gutter and dog catchers. I mean,
except for in this race, it wasn't just those things that were on the ballot. Mm-hmm. I'm a woman. I'm going to make sure your voice is heard. Mm-hmm. I'm a gay individual, and I'm going to make sure that constituency is represented mm-hmm. as well. And I'm not saying any of those things are wrong. Mm-hmm. That just is different from the Jackie I understood in the legislature.
Yeah. Do you think, Dan, that Mayor Becker should have conceded or should concede at this point? My understanding is we still have less than 50% of the vote in. I personally think that he's doing the right thing out of you know,
aren't concessions bunk?
Well,
I mean, the next day, if there's a concession at night and the next day they come back and they say, oh, by the way, you won, what would everybody say?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you've conceded already, you. So I'm sorry.
No surprise, yeah. That he hasn't conceded. Jim, how big of a deal is it that Salt Lake City, in the heart of the conservative West, has a gay mayor?
I can't imagine a better economic development chit to have in our quiver. I saw in the back of Governing Magazine, there was an interview with the incoming chairman of the, what is it called, what Bramble's job is.
The head of NCSL.
NCSL, yeah. National Conference of State Legislators.
Right. It's a big deal for legislators. And so there's the back page, and it's an interview with our new president. And they're talking to him, and he says, yes, I want to do for the country what we've done in Utah. And we were able to take the most divisive social issue, and we were able to solve it. I mean, there is great play, because it's true, in doing away with stereotypes that people have about Salt Lake City and about Utah, and telling people we're not the South, and we do get along, and we do have this kind of ability to work together. I think it is a terrific day and moment. And as people are saying, oh, Jim, who cares? You know what? Mitt Romney in this state wasn't just so loved and so watched and so involved just because he was a good candidate. There is a Klan mentality in politics, and it is, and it's there. And I am very, very pleased and happy for the LGBT community. I think it's a proud moment.
Well said, and only coming from you, Jim. You know the community so well and have been a leader there. I just want to mention on the Ralph Becker side, of course, we don't know how this is going to – the election has not been determined. But if it's true that he has not been reelected, what a legacy he leaves behind. I think he will go down as the best economic legacy I've seen in a Salt Lake City mayor. When you look at downtown revitalization, Sugar House renewal, the regional rail that's come into the city during his time and how helpful that's been. The North Temple Viaduct.
Well, and think about the turbulent business yes. community we had during the time of the previous administration,
yeah.
Kind of like Voldemort
yeah.
to me. I won't mention his name. But it was a turbulent business environment, and there was a lot of unpredictability in the city and
yeah.
its administration,
yeah.
and Becker did bring that.
Mayor Becker had a temperament that took this city to a different level in the way he worked
yeah.
with the legislature and things. And I would just mention that Mayor Biskupski, if that holds, would be well to keep that momentum, to learn from it. They use this term in politics that after you win an election, avoid a lonely victory.
Mm.
And that always means, yeah, lonely victory means, you know, don't go take this and not share it.
Yeah.
And sharing it would mean counsel with Mayor Becker, learn from Mayor Becker, take what's good from Mayor Becker and keep it going.
I mean, it was the day of the election, and Jackie invited me to go to lunch, and I thought it was going to be a kind of rally and whatever. And I got to the restaurant, and just the two of us were there. And I want to tell you, this is a woman who is rising to the seat. She talked about building bridges. She talked about sitting down with the people that had opposed her. She talked about meeting one-on-one. She talked about finding the best people in America to sit and work with her. I think we're going to be in a very, very good position.
And there will be a bellwether decision that we can all watch on this, and it'll be who she picks to serve as her chief of staff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that someone who's more cloistered with her, or is it someone who already knows the community and is involved and... That's going to be the one I'm going to watch for, Dan.
Yeah, I hate to break an early announcement, but it's actually me, Jim. She wants a really far right of this.
Got to do something counterintuitive.
Go, Ralph.
Just a couple minutes left in this segment, but let's talk for just a minute about what happened with the Prop 1. This is the ballot that would raise the sales tax for transit and roads and trails. Looks like it's going to pass in Davis and Weber. Very iffy in Salt Lake and definitely a no in Utah County.
So interesting, right?
Yeah, yeah.
This is the first time I've ever seen a tax increase on the ballot in Salt Lake County fail.
It goes down.
And so, you know, it was interesting to watch the social media responses after watching this thing go down. But I think everyone is seeing this play out, that the more people that participate, the more conservative the voices.
Yeah, interesting, because of the mail-in ballot.
Because the mail-in ballot, we had a higher
participation
rate. They're
saying participation's much better, which is so great.
We didn't need Count My Vote. We needed to have mail-in ballots. That's a whole other
Jim, how do you see the Prop 1 not passing in Salt Lake County, if that holds?
We are in desperate need of that transportation money. I think it
Never
was
saw a tax he didn't like, Dan.
And the anti-UTA vote, I think a lot of people didn't want it.
Yeah.
And I voted for it, but I grimaced because I want to see money on the ballot for education before I see it for roads, because the transportation piggies are already in there in every pot. So I'll recognize that we're serious about funding education when we're funding schools at the ballot and not more construction.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner, joined by Dan McKay and Jim DeBacchus. Stay tuned.
This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
This is Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. We talked a bit about election day and whatnot. Let's talk a little bit about the Utah governor's race and Jonathan Johnson. And I bring it up because I was riding my bike this week, and I was out by the new Overstock headquarters in Midvale. I don't know if you gentlemen have seen that, but it's a coliseum. It's shaped like a Q, an O, I think, and they call it the Peace Coliseum because the inside of it has the peace sign. This sounds a lot like what I know of Patrick Byrne.
They're Jim's people. Oh, yeah, it's true. Patrick probably the same way.
So anyway, it's just another, it's a symbol. It has nothing to do really with Jonathan Johnson running for governor, but I just think it's interesting because they're starting, I'm starting to see the mark of Overstock and Jonathan running for governor. And then we've got this news that Overstock is stockpiling precious metals and food.
Why is that so bad? I don't understand, Jim.
It's in our culture, Jim. That's in our DNA. But I do think with the stuff, you know, putting away gold and Bitcoin and all the things that, I mean, this is an interesting company. I'll just say that.
Look, this is a wacko. Jonathan Johnson
is... Oh, I thought you were talking about Patrick Byrne. I was like, well, he's the president of the company. And
Jonathan Johnson is a wacko who's a rich wacko. Just because you run a company doesn't mean you're bright. Just because you're poor doesn't mean you're angelic. The company, under Mr. Jonathan Johnson's leadership, Overstock, has $10.9 million in gold and silver locked away, and it's there so when the government completely collapses, he'll be able to make payroll. And he says, according to the Tribune, that if he becomes governor, we can look forward to policies like that.
Like preparedness and looking forward and being prepared. Those are terrible policies in your mind, I understand. But remember, a white gay male runs Apple Computers. They have more than $194 billion in cash reserves.
And not
and you're
one
concerned
penny in gold.
About, so what?
Look, this
how
is
you
a,
decide to diversify your asset for the purpose of preserving your employees'
rights? This is not
right?
about diversified assets. This is about a tinfoil hat mentality that Mr. Johnson has from the Glenn Beck
Jim,
School of Survivalism.
It won't surprise you.
And it's pathetic.
It won't surprise you that I have worked with Jonathan Johnson because you're always teasing about my roots in business and whatnot. But
she's a closet right-winger. It's okay.
But, he's a capable executive. He's shown leadership in this state on air quality. I love it that he's stepping up and actually, making the governor's race somewhat competitive. I haven't seen that from the Democratic side. So, more power to him.
Yeah,
more power to him. Here's my challenge. Mr. Johnson, the governor will not debate you. You've asked, you've begged, you've whined, you've pleaded. I tell you, Mr. Johnson, you pick places around the state of Utah, and I'll debate you. And we'll talk. I'm not running for governor, but I will
debate you,
and you can get your message out. And guess what? To your constituency, you're probably going to seem like a hero because I'm going to support the president and a lot of other things. Come on. Can you take a punch? Let's do it, Jonathan.
Let's jump to Count My Vote and Senate Bill 54. I was driving home from work this week. I heard a KSL lead report where they said, Count My Vote goes down in flames, story in 10 minutes or whatever. And I'm just like, come on.
Right.
I mean, that they just didn't get it.
Good. Finally, you see the media might not
I did see that.
Have
and,
a balance.
And so here's might what not. You have. You have a petition that wants to create a direct route to the primary. It looks like it's going to win.
Say it slowly, Natty, because most people don't understand
what we're even talking about. Dan's better do this than I am, but you only get to the ballot in this state, pre-count my vote, if you go through the caucus convention system. And it's a very limited, narrow, time-certain event that doesn't fit in modern day. And so the whole count my vote thing was to get more participation and get a direct route to the primary, so through signatures, like most every other state, modernize. And in the end, people like Dan, to his credit, went to save the caucus convention system because it has some advantages. And we created, through SB 54, a dual system, two ways to the ballot.
Okay, but I'm just gonna quibble because calling it antiquated or not modern is a little bit interesting. But never mind the
fact. How is it? Well, we shouldn't debate that.
Yeah. Never mind the fact that the entire Electoral College is based on the same process. But anyway,
yeah, but
the SB 54 lawsuit, basically the alternative path, which was the key for the Count My Vote constituency. It's everything. That's what they really wanted. The idea that the compromise also tried to encourage or tried to require all the parties to open up their races to the only party that is growing in the state of Utah.
And the largest.
The Democrats are not growing. The Republicans are not growing.
Unaffiliated
is the only one growing.
That's Utah.
So the idea that the Republican Party...
Sounds like the political middle to me.
Yeah. Well, except for...
My party's growing. Did you hear that?
If you look at Prop 1's success, you might not see that. But that being said, I think if you chuck out the unaffiliated issue and they can no longer vote in the primary, which I thought was a bad policy when we closed the party 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But now that we've closed the party and we want to keep it closed, so that's basically what we litigated for, was to keep it closed. There's still an alternative path. Yeah. And there is still the caucus convention process.
Jim, the message to the message to the voter.
I want to dumb this down a little bit.
Yeah,
okay?
The message.
Because I don't think you're talking political blah blah. Because I'm not sure what you're talking about, and I was a party chair. Before, if you wanted to run for office, you had to go to the – you had to get elected by a very elite group of delegates. And
small.
And they decided,
let's just
right?
call it a small group.
You're talking about East Avenue. Sorry. My delegates weren't elite.
Okay. So what Count My Vote was trying to do is say anybody that decided to run for a party – you could put your name on the ballot, and then the voters would go and select who the primary candidate was going to be.
Sure. Take the best example with Senator Bob Bennett, who, because of a variety of reasons, was not going to get through the caucus system, did not. And he could have, knowing that, had a signature gathering process and been on the ballot, and everybody that's a Republican could have voted on it.
So
instead, a very small group got
the GOP machinery in the state raised millions of dollars, and they went out and threatened through an initiative to change that, because the Republicans, it's their sandbox. They got it the way they want. They certainly weren't going to change that. So Count My Vote, which really was Republicans trying to moderate out their party, went out, raised hundreds of thousands of names. Nobody is sure whether they were going to get enough or not. So the legislature swooped in, Senator Bramble, and decided, you know what, we're not taking a chance that they get everything the way they want to. Count My Vote. Count My Vote got panicky and said, you know what, we're not sure we're actually going to get them. So they came up with kind of a hybrid by law.
This is the world according to Jim.
I would love to live in his mind for a half hour, because it would just
they
be
did
awesome.
Have a, they were this close to getting signatures, but then it would have required a full year of doing a ballot campaign and the expense of it, and it just wasn't worth it because we had a good compromise.
So then, remember, this is between the Republicans, and so the Republican Party went crazy under Chairman Evans at the compromise that the Republican legislators
and the Democrats
and the
at the time were
vote.
Fighting against the Count My Vote initiative also. Don't give me this,
and
it was
so,
only Republicans.
So that's what happened, and now it was in the hands of a judge who came out and basically said, we're going to keep the delegates, and we're going to exclude, if parties want to exclude anybody that isn't a member of their party from the primary and from being a delegate. Is that what they're
decided? They couldn't be a delegate anyway.
But can non-affiliated people vote in a Republican primary,
that was,
according to the judge?
No, they cannot.
They
now.
Cannot.
Yeah.
Okay.
That
yeah,
was the decision.
And so another way to really simply say this is the judge basically said, everything about Count My Vote works and is great in the law of the land, but one thing, and that is that political parties can close their primaries.
Yeah, that's right.
And I was the governor's spokesperson, I don't remember, let's say 2001, too, when the Republican Party closed their primary. So I'm sitting up there, and all of a sudden the Republican Party closed it, and I've got Olene Walker and Mike Leavitt are like, what do you think? And the press asking, and both Olene Walker and Mike Leavitt said, this is awful.
Yeah.
It was very controversial. Yeah, so for many, many years, both the Democrats and the Republicans were open. But what happens, if I'm a registered Republican, I go vote in the Republican primary. If I wasn't registered, I have to register first.
Yeah.
And it leads to a more concentrated ideological voter.
Yeah.
Quite possibly, right? I think that's certainly one argument. But the other argument is That if you can't take the effort or aren't interested in taking the effort in checking a box, I mean, smaller than 1 inch of ink, to say you're Republican, why would you even care about their candidates?
That's the argument. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner, joined on the right by Dan McKay and on the left by Jim DeBacchus. Let's flip it up just a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about the presidential race. There's just always so much news happening. Seeing recent polls that if Hillary Clinton were against Donald Trump, she would win.
Yeah.
But if Hillary Clinton were against Marco Rubio or against Chris Christie, mm-hmm. She'd lose.
She'd lose.
Yeah. Kind of interesting. You guys' reaction to that?
The air just blew out of the room for Jim.
Look,
so he's...
there's only one person.
Because Trump's not going to be the Republican guy.
He will not be the Republican. He is finally on the downward trend.
Yeah.
There's only one Republican that could beat Hillary Clinton, and that's Rubio. And I hope Republicans are too dumb to figure that out. They're all kind of one crazy brain because they all have to kneel down to the same gods of the weird right wing. So it doesn't really matter that much. But Rubio, imagine those podiums. And you've got this almost 70-year-old woman who represents everything in the past and Bill Clinton. And you have this handsome, young, Hispanic with this terrific story. Man, that's Kennedy versus
the right-wing god, also known as the
On the political right, we get the Cook political report that shows in what would be an Owens-Mia Love race he's changing the race from Mia to be likely to just to lean.
Yeah.
And I guess that's big news.
It's not likely. It's likely Republican or likely Democrat, and mm-hmm. then there's varying degrees within that. That's mm-hmm. the Cook Report. To go from leans Republican or from likely Republican to leans Republican reflects the results of the last race.
Yeah, because it's so tight.
And the previous race and the previous race and the previous race. So I don't think there's a race in the state.
I have to just call him
on
that. Previous race. So we had redistricting. Reapportionment.
Yeah.
There wasn't a district four.
Oh,
for
how
that
close was
back.
Morgan Philpott to taking out? I mean, how close is Morgan Philpott to taking out Jim Matheson? It was within inches.
Yeah, Matheson's always.
And it's 6 months ago.
By the skin of his hair.
And Jim always does that, but that's okay.
But there's only been two elections in that fourth district.
In that district. Right. But
it's not about previous history.
It's
not about previous history. They're looking at the dynamics of the last 3 or 4 months and saying, it's changed, and it's gone from likely to leaning Mia winning. That is a significant difference. That's nothing. I mean, the past history remained the same.
But because
there's a dynamic change.
So last election, what did the DNC do to support Doug Owens?
Nothing.
Nothing. This year they've decided that's a spotlight race, and we're going to support it financially. That is enough, in my opinion, to move that race.
I think the biggest thing that will hurt me is if she doesn't have Dave being her. Remind me Dave's last name.
Dave Hansen.
Yeah, Dave Hansen running her campaign.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, it was time for us to go to gripes. I hope you guys are ready. I'll start out if you're not. Do you, Mr. Jim, do you have a gripe on your mind?
No, you go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to go with a gripe. We had Prop 1 election. We're familiar with the term an airshed, a watershed. We also have a commuter shed. It really bothers me that we make transportation decisions based on county boundaries because it's a commuter shed. There's a natural kind of flow of traffic and things, and it troubles me that Weber and Davis are going to have this expanded bus when Salt Lake won't and vice versa. I just think we should do UTA-type elections on a regional basis. Jim?
Look, this is a little unusual, and I agree with you.
I don't know if that's good.
George Pence III put this on his Facebook post. It's just a paragraph. I want this to be... I'll read it quickly. Last Saturday, I cheered myself hoarse at the University of Utah football game. However, the greatest source of inspiration and heroism was not on the field. It was on the bench one row below me. There sat young parents with a profoundly disabled daughter. She could not stand or talk. Her jaw was slack. Her tongue rested on the lowered lip. Her eyes rolled without a clear sense of attention or focus. Her father cuddled her, nuzzled her, and treated his treasure as if she were everything in the world. He needed to be happy. What 40,000 fans witnessed that day was small compared to the miracle I saw in front of me.
That's beautiful. Who is this guy?
He's a blogger.
I love it. And he was at the U game.
Yeah, and there's a picture of this.
So your gripe is the U game?
Of this, of this man with his daughter.
He does inspiration.
I mean, it's beautiful. I'm not thinking. I'm just sorry.
Anyway.
Dan McKay, your gripe.
Boy, after something like that.
I know. He does that. He'll do that to you. That's
you
a heart
perspective.
Tear.
I think my gripe is that it snowed this week. and I know that's
it barely
a little,
did, but it did.
A little bit. But it's up in the hills. There's probably more snow. But in the valley, we saw a few flakes as we're walking around this
you
week.
You not a skier, Dan?
I like to ski.
You're a golfer.
I like to ski, but I'm a golfer. And a white ball and a white snowfield does not match.
I see flakes year-round at the legislature, so I don't know why you're...
I can see, though, why you hesitated after Jim had this very kind of poetic, heartwarming, tale of humanity, and you had to talk about...
Yeah, snowflakes. Poor me.
I love it. Well, it's been a fun week in politics in the state. We hope you'll join us next week. I'm Natalie Gochner. I represent the Political Center. Dan McKay on the political right. Jim DeBacchus on the left. The program is produced by Ross Chambliss. Thank you for listening.